This is the IBJ podcast for the week of March the 1st, 2021. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. In less than 2 weeks, Indianapolis will swing its doors wide for 68 college basketball teams, plus thousands more people instrumental to staging the NCAA men's basketball tournament. And there will be thousands more visitors, family members, and friends of the players, members of the media from all over the United States and the rest of the globe, and fans, some of whom might be able to score seats in the reduced capacity stadiums, or some who just want to be close to the action. And the bottom line for all these folks is that they're going to want to eat. Certainly one of the most important benefits of the city's historic stint hosting all of March Madness will be the boost to downtown restaurants after a very difficult year. Some restaurants weren't able to survive the COVID-related disruptions, in addition to the riots and other social unrest that gave some people the impression the downtown was no longer safe. The remaining restaurateurs, on the whole, are very excited about the opportunity, although no one knows quite what to expect in terms of how much business the tournament could generate over a three-week period. Their hopes have been lifted by a few very encouraging decisions in the last 10 days. The NCAA decided that the venues will be allowed to fill 25% of their seats. And on the morning of February 25th, just as I was conducting interviews for this podcast, health officials announced that Marion County restaurants could go from 50% to 75% of their seating capacity for indoor dining. Capacity for bars would go from 25% to 50%. And bars and restaurants will be able to extend their hours from midnight to 2 a.m. So this was new information as I was interviewing Michael Cranfill, co-owner of District Tap, which has a downtown location that could not be any better situated to take advantage of March Madness foot traffic, and Mike Cunningham, CEO of Cunningham Restaurant Group, which runs more than 30 restaurants, many of them downtown. Let's see what these guys had to say about what they're expecting or how they're expecting to benefit from the tournament, as well as how they've been able to put themselves in this position by making it through the last year. I'm pleased to welcome to the IBJ Podcast Virtual Studio, Michael Cranfill. He's the co-owner of the District Tap, which has two locations in Indianapolis, one on East 82nd Street and the other at 141 South Meridian, which will be right in the middle of all of the March Madness tournament action downtown. He's also co-owner of Cholita, a taqueria in Broad Ripple. Michael, thank you for making time today.
Hey, absolutely. Proud to be here.
Let me ask you first, when you first heard that Indianapolis would host essentially all of March Madness, what was your reaction? What did you think?
Well, it had the potential to be the shock to the system that would bring downtown Indianapolis back to life. And depending on how the games would play out, it could either be a good thing or it could be the most amazing thing to really bring businesses that have just really suffered even more so than most restaurants and most businesses because of the pandemic, just because of the fact that people haven't really been downtown as much. They haven't been working downtown. While people are moving downtown more and more, that kind of Mile Square, South Meridian Street, around the circle, just really relies on daytime population, tourism traffic, concerts, sports. And that really is what keeps that core of downtown alive. And not having any of that for a year, this is the best news we ever could have had.
And then about a week ago, we learned that the venues will be able to operate at 25% capacity. Was that really the bigger news?
Well, so that's what took this from good to better than we could have ever imagined for. Matter of fact, I was just on a conference call on Tuesday with the powers that be. I participate in something called the Indy Tourism Recovery Task Force that has a lot of the organization Downtown Indy Inc., Visit Indy. It's led by Susie Townsend. And they were going through basically that fans were not going to be really allowed to games until Final Four and the last couple of games. Other than that, there was going to be maybe each player of the team could have 6 tickets to hand out to their family. So it went from that news to then 3 days later, we hear news coming out stating that all games will now allowed to have a 25% fan base. It was the best Christmas late Christmas present I ever could have dreamed.
And we should probably say too, that right before this interview, we got some more news. Tell me what you have heard.
Yeah. So I still can neither confirm nor deny this, but right as we were preparing for this interview, my phone started blowing up from my GM, and they were talking about the fact that they just saw the mayor and Dr. Virginia Kane speaks, stating that on March 1st, Marion County bars and restaurants are going to get their bar tops back, which we haven't had since the beginning of the pandemic, and that we were going to be able to go from 50% indoor dining to 75% capacity, and to be able to open, to be open during hours up to 2 a.m. And so which one's better? I don't know. They're both, it's the two best things I've heard in over a year, honestly.
What has the pandemic been like?
Let me go back to a year ago. Let's talk about when this first began. So here we were, District Tap had been very successfully operating on the north side of Indianapolis by Keystone for 6 years. We had just opened up downtown in November of 2019. So we got a little bit of the cold season in there, and we saw some solid numbers. And then downtown, we kind of go through January and February, and those are some slow months downtown. But then it's like, then when downtown comes back, it comes roaring back, and watch out, because here it comes. So here we are. It's mid-March, early mid-March. We're preparing for Big Ten Championship. We're preparing for rounds of March Madness being held in Indianapolis. We're preparing for St. Patty's Day. We've got big tents set up in both locations, and we're getting ready to do the most sales volume we've ever done as an organization. And really like our first big stress test of all hands on deck running Redline. Then all of a sudden, I remember making the phone call to my GM, my operating partners, and just being like, shut down, take down the tents. We're not going to be hosting the party. The men's Big Ten basketball tournament is shut down halfway during the tournament. And to go from having, you know, the keg coolers full, filling out, to the refrigerators full, to having to just having to literally shut off everything. It was a pretty emotional experience. And then from that point, you know, we had to shut down all indoor dining, you know, to operate at, you know, 15 or 20% capacity to go orders only. It was a shock to the system. And it was a questioning of what's happening next. What does the future look like? There were so many unknowns that, you know, typically those people who get into the restaurant business, we do this because you're in control of your own destiny. Never could have imagined a point in time where the government says in that you can't operate anymore.
Yeah. For an undetermined period of time.
Yeah.
Did any point were you like, you know what, let's just bail. It's a new location. There's a nice try.
We never allowed ourselves to see that. We said, you know, oh, what the heck? We're going to do whatever it takes. And we don't know what that looks like yet, but we're going to figure it out.
And how have you been able to continue to operate?
So I will say this, government programs that have gone out there like the PPP has been a major force in us being able to do that. For us to be able to continually operate downtown at losses, at a point where it would be cheaper for us just to shut our doors down for a time period and just pay our rent bill. But that has allowed us to keep our team together, to be able to continue to provide service to those people who are still working downtown, who are working at hotels or working at other restaurants, who are traveling into the city. We've been able to provide them a great experience downtown throughout all of this. And I'm extremely proud, and most proud, I'm proud of all of my team members, of all the restaurants, but I am truly the most proud of downtown for them to be able to endure everything that they've seen over the last year, not just coronavirus, social unrest downtown. And there was a point in time, it's like, what the hell's next? But I will say this, that all of that is behind us. Downtown is coming back to life. And it is the same fun, safe place that people had come to love about coming downtown over the last 20, 30 years.
So you're in a situation now where you probably will be able to operate pretty much close to what your capacity had been planned to be. How do you plan for that?
we have enough people on staff to be able to operate at full capacity. We just haven't been able to give them the hours that they want. So people are at a reduced hour. So people are having to pick up another job somewhere else. But, you know, there is going to be some more hiring involved. And from a front of the house standpoint, now hearing that the bar is coming back, I guarantee you over the next 24 hours, I'm going to be getting quite a few texts, people hitting me up on Facebook. Hey, we're ready to help out. You know, they have either worked for us in the past or they're friends of people who work for us, who know our system. We'll be able to ramp up. I would say the bigger challenge is, and right now is there is a lack of back of the house employees. There, you know, we are actively hiring to bring on a couple of more. But I think a lot of the businesses, hotels especially, that have maybe been operating at, you know, 15% capacity or something like that for a very long time, you know, to operate for a month long period at 100% capacity or something near to it is going to be a big shock to their system. And something tells me that having the the back of the house employees and the hiring, that is going to be a challenge that the city is going to face. I think we're in a better position than most, luckily, but that will be a challenge.
And when we say back of the house, we mean the kitchen staff.
Exactly. Exactly. The people who are making the magic happen of the restaurant, that beautiful dish in front of you, that is not something that comes easily, and that takes training. And it's hard work back there, especially imagine working in a hot kitchen over a fryer and now you're having to wear a mask. I mean, that's not the most comfortable environment. So I take my hat off to all the guys and to all the people in the back of the house of establishments everywhere, because it's been a tough work environment for them.
The downtown location district tap, like I said, is really dead center of all this tournament action. You're on the Georgia Street promenade that, you know, was established for the Super Bowl. And just for these kinds of situations where we have a ton of people downtown and they just need a place to congregate, mm-hmm. Do you need to do anything special to bring people in?
Well, so, you know, we chose this based off three reasons: location, location, and location. So Georgia and South Meridian Street, if you're coming in for an event downtown, if you're coming in from out of town, that is the absolute bullseye of the action, just from the fact that you're a block and a half away from Banker's Life, you're just a few blocks away from Lucas Oil. That's the energy spot. That's our Bourbon Street when something's going on downtown. So of course we're going to be doing stuff special, but luckily that location is going to be the focal energy point. So I've actually been working with the Cultural Trails Department, with city officials, the fire department, police department, and we're working on a strategy to shut down Georgia Street and be able to allow restaurants to put up tents and expanded outdoor dining options to provide people who are coming in from in town or out of town some safe, socially distant dining and drinking and entertainment options for those people who do come in downtown. So it's going to be a really fun environment downtown, kind of spilling out onto the streets and being able to provide people with some fun, creative dining options.
So we've been talking about the downtown location. What about Broad Ripple and 82nd Street? Do you think that this staging this event downtown for 3 weeks is going to have a salutary effect on them as well?
Every single restaurant, hotel, probably within a 20-mile radius of Indianapolis is going to benefit from having this event going on. There's going to be so much entourage and collateral that comes along with hosting an event like this and having everyone in town. I think every single place is going to benefit. And so now the fact that we've got 25% of, you know, fans coming in town, those fans, when they're not watching a game or if they weren't able to get a ticket to the game, they're going to need a place to go watch the game. So if you don't have a TV in your restaurant, I think it's time you better invest in one, maybe about 8 TVs at least, because people are going to need a place to sit and watch the games while they're not physically at the game.
Well, best of luck to you. We'll have to check in with you guys when we get closer.
Hey, absolutely. We couldn't be more ecstatic.
Up next, we'll hear from Mike Cunningham of Cunningham Restaurant Group about how he hopes to benefit from March Madness and how the group was able to weather a year of depressed sales and uncertainty due to COVID-19.
For our next guest, I'm pleased to welcome Mike Cunningham, the founder and CEO of Cunningham Restaurant Group. Mike, thanks so much for taking time on what I'm sure is a super busy day.
Pleasure to do it, Mason. Thanks.
I want to quickly familiarize or reintroduce our listeners to Cunningham Restaurant Group. Now, you opened your first restaurant in Brownsburg, is that right, in 1997?
That is correct.
There are now how many restaurants in the group?
35 locations.
35.
In three
states. What to me is remarkable is how many of these restaurants are freestanding one-off concepts that are tailored specifically, you know, for their individual environments. They're different brands. They have unique menus. Since we're talking about downtown Indianapolis today, I'll just go through some of the ones that are downtown, either on or near the Mass Ave corridor. We have Vita, fine dining restaurant, one of the best reviewed restaurants in the city. Is it Livery or Livery?
Livery.
Livery, right? A bar and restaurant concept, which I think also has a location in Noblesville. Is that right?
That is correct, yeah.
There's Mesh, Union 50, another restaurant and bar concept. Mm-hmm. Tavern on the Point, I assume that is still has a bar in it.
Yes.
And it's a reincarnation from the Old Point Tavern. Mm-hmm. Across the street, there's Brew Burger, which actually is a concept you've replicated in several places.
Right. We're opening our 13th location in a couple of weeks in Brownsburg.
There's Nesso, an Italian restaurant in the Alexander Hotel on downtown Southside. It is a tribute to you that we could keep going, but we'll just cut that off there if that's okay. And let me ask you first about the big news from this morning. So Mayor Hogsett has said they're increasing the caps on indoor seating to 75% of capacity from, was it 50% prior?
Mm-hmm.
Beginning March 1st, bar seating will be permitted. Bars will be allowed to stay open until 2 a.m. instead of midnight. Outdoor seating will remain at 100% capacity. Right off the bat, when you heard that today, what was your reaction? What did that mean to you?
Well, it's great news. It's very welcoming. We, especially the bar seating that we've, Marion County's not had for a long time now, where the surrounding counties are allowed to seat at bars. So the 75% welcome, but it's, again, it's not a huge difference because they're still asking us to social distance. And 75, when you start spreading tables out 6 feet apart, it's difficult to get to 75, but it will help us some, but the bar seating is the big win, I think.
Yeah. For my limited experience in the restaurant industry, you know, the bar is where a lot of money is made.
Sure. Yeah. And then there's a lot of our clientele want to sit at the bars. They want to engage with our bartenders and our team members. So that's been missing. It takes a little bit of the vibe away from what we do, for sure.
When you hear something like that, what's the first thing you need to do as the boss of a big restaurant group? Like, what wheels need to begin turning?
I mean, it starts with furniture has to be placed back in where you know, because we pulled most of, if not all, the bar stools out of the restaurant. So we'll get that. And then we're also going to adjust the hours too. I think having bar seating, we've reduced our hours or close times by an hour in most of the restaurants. So we'll get things back to where they were. And then it's just a matter of communicating that to the team.
So given this news, what are your hopes now for the traffic that you could see during the NCAA tournament over 3 weeks in March?
Well, obviously the first week is going to be an interesting weekend with 68 teams coming into town. And what that means for the teams themselves, they're going to be quarantined in the hotels. And we are working with Downtown Indy on feeding some of these teams. They're taking applications from restaurants to offer menus for teams. They likely will need at least one, maybe two meals a day that they're going to get outside of their hotel. So that we're working with them on that, but also the 25% attendance will obviously spin off some traffic downtown, that's much needed traffic. And we think on Mass Avenue, we'll feel some of that, maybe to the tune of 10 or 20% increase. I think Illinois Street will feel it much more. Yeah, we look forward to seeing that activity downtown. We've obviously with restaurants, we have them in the Indianapolis market. We have them in the suburbs as well as downtown, and our suburbia restaurants have performed far better than our downtown restaurants for all the obvious reasons, missing the downtown workforce, obviously, and sporting events and concerts and convention business and all that stuff, obviously, had been gone for a year now. So we definitely feel like we're going to benefit from it, but it's a little bit of a question mark as to how much.
Yeah, I was going to point out, as I think you did, that, I mean, the concentration of your restaurants tends to be kind of on the northeast side of downtown. Kind of the tournament action is just a little bit south of downtown and in the southwest. I would imagine that it's hard to kind of figure just how much traffic you're going to see on Mass Ave and that those connected areas.
Yeah, I think Mass Avenue is it's a bit of a gem for the city. If you're a visitor, I think you're going to somehow figure out a way that you have to visit Mass Ave, right? And weather will drive that a little bit too. If we, you know, the weather cooperates and we have days like today where it's 57 and sunny, I think we'll see more foot traffic coming over to Mass Avenue. And if we have, you know, if we don't get lucky with the weather, we'll see less. But I do think every year Mass Ave, you know, minus COVID, Mass Ave has really grown into a destination for our visitors in the city. So we hope they find us and we hope the traffic picks up for sure. So,
and you think maybe 10 to 15% increase in sales?
I'm kind of thinking 10 to 20. I don't see a huge jump. I hope I'm proven wrong that it's 30 or 40. And I think I think the Illinois Street corridor might see a little better jump than we will, because we are off the beaten path, like you said. And weekends will be strong. And, you know, like I said, if the weather cooperates with us, people will be out and about. If it's not, then they'll be hunkering down. So there's a lot of unknowns. And the, you know, the thing I mentioned before about just the demand for the team, the 30 to 40 people per team that's coming to town, and how that fits into how we're able to execute that, because we're being told that the orders for that type of those type of meals for the teams are going to come at like a 4-hour notice. So it's going to be quite demanding, yes, to try and figure out how do we execute that. And we're still in the process of trying to figure that out with the folks that are organizing that. But it's quite challenging to be prepared to create, you know, 30 or 40 meals on a 4-hour notice. But, you know, that first weekend, it could be 10 teams that want to do that, right?
Wow.
And so it's one thing to do 30 or 40. It's another thing to do 300, you know, if 10 teams inquire. And so we there's some stuff that we still have to figure out. But
so they could all decide, boy, this Brewburger place sounds awesome.
Right. Yeah. I know they don't want to assign teams certain restaurants. I understand they don't want to do that, but we're still trying to figure out the best way, because everybody wants this to go off smoothly and be executed properly. So we're still working through that part of it.
Let's go backwards just a little bit. About 12 months ago, we were preparing for the Big Ten tournament and everything just kind of went cattywampus on us. What has the last year been like for the restaurant group? I mean, can you think of a couple of words that would describe it?
Challenging would be the first word. We're coming on a year anniversary. March 16th was the shutdown order. Just to paint a little picture of what that was like that week, we laid off about 1,700, furloughed about 1,700 employees. When the government says your business has to be shut down, you can't bring people to work if there's no jobs. And then we followed with keeping 20 of our locations open for carryout only. So we immediately shifted to a carryout only model. So that was interesting. It was actually very rewarding on my end to watch my team kind of spring into action and produce really a new business model within a week's time. You know, we're talking about packaging. The quantity of packaging needed, how to communicate to our guests what we were doing, how to get each team geared up to run a carryout only models. These were all things that were done on the fly. And it really, like I said, it was really pretty impressive for me to watch our team come together and execute this almost seamlessly. Within a couple of weeks, we were doing 35% of our revenue, previous revenue, just in carryout. And then we kept a lot of our team members working through that. About 300 team members kept jobs because of the carryout model. And then we did that for several months before we had the, you know, reopening of the stores at the capacity of 50% capacity with social distancing. So I would say in October, we were up to about 90% of revenue. And when I say revenue, it's versus 19 pre-COVID revenue. And a lot of that was with patio expansion downtown. As you know, Mass Avenue was blocked off and we expanded patios onto the street. And that with carryout remaining very strong, even though people were allowed to come back, carryout still to this today remains very strong. Prior to COVID, we were about 4% of our revenue was done in carryout because we're more of a sit-down restaurant. But we're now, you know, 15 to 20% of our revenue is currently carryout, depending on which concept. So we think that'll level off, but it'll still be substantially more than it was prior to COVID. So So yeah, it's just been an interesting year. Fortunately for us, we were able to keeping the lights on, so to speak, and then being ready and very nimble to get people back as we needed them. So fortunately for us, we are now fully matched on our full-time equivalents. We're, you know, we have more people working for us today than we did when we shut down with COVID, which is remarkable. And part of that has to do with we've opened two new restaurants, one being the Livery at Hamilton Town Center, and one being a brew at Keystone the Crossing. Those have been opens that we were committed to prior to COVID. And we also have, we had three other commitments made prior to COVID that we will be opening in the next 60 days. One will be the brew in Brownsburg, which opens March 15th. And then our new Asian inspired concept called Modita, which is part of Bottleworks, will be opening March 29th. Super excited about that. It's always fun to do the new stuff. And then we have our third Rise, which is a breakfast lunch concept that's going to be opening in Carmel at Old Meridian and 131st Street, Main Street. So very busy. We're looking forward to coming out of COVID, running, not limping. The big million-dollar question is how strong do we come out of COVID? You know, how what's the market like? How is this year something we've none of us have ever experienced? What's the lasting effect of it? And we don't know that. We all have opinions, but we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to explain that to me. I feel already about 50% more optimistic than I did earlier today.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
My thanks again to Michael Cranfill and Mike Cunningham. In the latest issue of IBJ, Susan Orr has more perspectives on what March Madness could mean for downtown restaurants. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few other strong stories I want to draw to your attention. What if Indianapolis hosted all of March Madness and nobody came? Okay, that's not likely. But local officials seem to want to be very conservative about predicting the total economic impact, almost certain to be in the nine figures, due to the unprecedented conditions behind this first ever hosting event. Mickey Shuey has more. Meanwhile, Indiana legislators are pleasantly surprised they've reached the halfway point in their latest session without a major COVID-related disruption. But their precautions haven't prevented debate and drama. Lindsay Erdody brings us up to speed on the biggest issues, bills, and flashpoints of the General Assembly session so far. Also in this week's issue, John Russell takes a closer look at legislation Indiana lawmakers are considering to more tightly regulate pharmacy benefits managers, the powerful but little-known set of middlemen who negotiate prices and rebates between drug makers and pharmacies. They are notoriously secretive about their contracts, making it difficult for consumers, employers, and insurance managers to see if they're getting a good deal. Again, you can read these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. I will say it's quite a bit easier to access all of the latest news and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to IBJ.com and click on the subscribe button. Hey, and thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbetter. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.